Welcome to A-Minder, a podcast where we summarize the latest publications on neurodegenerative disease research so that you can stay up to date with the newest findings. Every month, our team of scientists will sort and organize the titles into themes and present shortened versions of the abstracts. We'll make sure to mention the title, the journal, the first author, and the last author for each publication. Whether you're in the lab, on the bus, or cooking your meal, we hope you find this podcast helpful. Today's episode is part of the Alzheimer's disease series, and we'll be covering a portion of the papers of February 2020. This is one of our trial episodes, so it's not a full-length one, and we're trying to get practice, and we'll hope to use your feedback to do better in our full-length episodes. So please, if you have any ideas, suggestions, feedback, send us an email at aminderpodcast@gmail.com. My name is Sarah Dwidi, and I'll be hosting this segment on models and methods along with Nyla Coleman. She will cover the first set of subthemes, starting with lab techniques, then moving on to new animal models, validating an old model, new relevant cell lines, and tissue engineering. Then you'll hear from me on the papers that we sorted under human methodology and computer modeling. Nyla, you're up.
Okay, hello everyone. So in this subsection, I'll go over some papers that were published in February 2020 regarding new laboratory techniques. And we're going to start with a few papers that were published regarding tau detection and characterization. So specifically, the detection and characterization of phosphorylated tau or tau inclusions. We'll begin with a paper by Crow and Brendan. That's the first and last author. And this paper was published in the Journal of Biological Chemistry and is entitled Compound Screening in Cell-Based Models of Tau Inclusion Formation, Comparison of Primary Neuron and HEC-293 Cell Assays. So here the authors describe two cell-based assays of tau inclusion formation to screen for compounds that inhibit tau pathology. Firstly, a HEC-293 cell-based tau overexpression assay, and secondly, a primary rat cortical neuron assay with physiological tau expression. After screening 3,500 compounds with the HEC-293 cell tau aggregation assay, the few hit compounds identified generally failed to inhibit tau inclusion formation in the cortical neuron assay. The authors then screened the Prestwick library of mostly approved drugs in the cortical neuron assay, which led to the identification of a greater number of tau inclusion inhibitors, including four dopamine D2 receptor antagonists. These results suggest that neurons are very suitable for screening for tau inclusion inhibitors. All right, so next up we have a paper by first author, I'm sorry I'm going to butcher this name, Kawara Bayashi, and last author, Shoji. And this paper is entitled Novel ELISAs to Measure Total and Phosphorylated Tau in Cerebrospinal Fluid. And it was published in Neuroscience Letters. So in this study, the authors measured total tau and phosphorylated tau at threonine 181. I'm going to call this phospho-tau. So they measured both total tau and phospho-tau levels, which are established biomarkers of AD, to evaluate novel enzyme-linked immunosorbent assays, or ELISAs, using 72 cerebrospinal fluid samples from patients with AD with dementia and various other neurodegenerative diseases. Significant increases in both the total tau and phospho-tau levels were observed in Alzheimer's with dementia, and they found good correlates with widely used ELISA systems for total tau and phospho-tau, and showed that serum and hemoglobin contamination in cerebrospinal fluid samples did not decrease the sensitivity of their assay. Okay, so the next paper is by first author Kim, last author Park. This was published in Biosensors and Bioelectronics. The paper is entitled Femtomolar Sensing of Alzheimer's Tau Proteins by Water Oxidation Coupled Photoelectrochemical Platform. So here the authors report on an ultra-sensitive detection of total tau protein using an artificial electron donor-free BIVO4-based photoelectrochemical or this is also called PEC, analysis. Without artificial electron donors, it exhibited a strong photocurrent signal, which was amplified by peroxidase-catalyzed precipitation. This platform allows for accurately and selectively recognizing total tau protein down to femtomolar concentrations. The limit of detection and of quantification were determined to be 1.59 femtomolar and 4.11 femtomolar, respectively. Okay, so the next paper is entitled A Single Ultrasensitive Assay for Detection and Discrimination of Tau Aggregates of Alzheimer's and PIC Diseases. And this is by Metric, first author, and last author, Kauy, that's C-A-U-G-H-E-Y, and was published in Acta Neuropathology Communications. So in this study, the authors describe an assay for detecting and discriminating tau aggregates. Adult humans express six isoforms of tau that contain either 3 or 4 microtubule binding repeats. So this is either 3R or 4R tau. Different diseases involve preferential aggregation of 3R and or 4R. In the case of Alzheimer's, both 3 and 4R tau molecules can develop. 3 ultrasensitive cell-free seed amplification assays, which are also called tau real-time quaking-induced conversion, or tau RTQIC assays. So those have been developed and preferentially detect 3R, 4R, or 3-4 and 4R, sorry, I meant, or 3R and 4R, sorry, that's a bit of a tongue twister. So any of those tau aggregates in biospecimens. In these reactions, low FG amounts of a given self-propagating protein aggregate, which is the seed, are incubated with a vast excess of recombinant tau monomers, the substrate, in multi-well plates. Over time, the seeds incorporate the substrate to grow into amyloids that can then be detected using thioflavin T fluorescence. This study describes a tau RTQIC assay that enables sensitive detection of and discrimination between PIC disease, Alzheimer's disease, and chronic traumatic encephalopathy seeds in brain homogenates, and they call this the K12 RTQIC assay. This is achieved through the quantitative differences in K12 RTQIC assay thioflavin T responses, which correlate with structural properties of the reaction products. Thus, this newly developed K12 assay provides a single readout for ultrasensitive detection and discrimination of tau aggregates comprised mainly of 3R or both 3R and 4R tau isoforms. That was a long summary. All right, so in this next section, we'll just cover some papers on new techniques for amyloid beta plaque or aggregate detection. And let's start with a study by Chakraborty and Sun, so first and last author. This is entitled Additive Collar Multiharmonic Generation Microscope for Simultaneous Label-Free Differentiation of Plaques, Tangles, and Neuronal Axons. And it was published in Biomedical Optics Express. The authors demonstrate, for the first time, a label-free additive collar multiharmonic generation microscopy, to simultaneously elucidate amyloid beta plaques and neurofibrillary tangles in different hues. By treating third harmonic generation and second harmonic generation as two primary colors, their studies can differentiate AD hallmarks in parallel and label-free by providing different additive colors between amyloid beta plaques, neurofibrillary tangles, and neuronal axons. They found weaker third harmonic generation presentation from neurofibrillary tangles in most places of the brain, which was corroborated by pixel-based quantification and by Pearson's correlation. This label-free technique fulfills the unmet challenge in the clinical histopathology for stain-free, slide-free differential visualization of neurodegenerative disease pathologies. Okay, the next one is also an imaging paper. It's entitled Super Resolution Infrared Imaging of Polymorphic Amyloid Aggregates Directly in Neurons. It is by Clementieva and Barondix and was published in Advanced Science. So this was actually a large international collaboration in which the authors test a novel approach to studying the molecular structure of A-beta aggregates directly within neurons at sub-micrometer resolution based on label-free optical photothermal infrared super-resolution microspectroscopy. These aggregates are detected even at the subcellular level, along the neurites and in dendritic spines, which had before not been possible. They report a polymorphic nature of amyloid structures that exist in AD transgenic neurons, which could trigger different mechanisms of AD progression. All right, so moving on. This next paper is by first author Nilsson, last author Klingstedt, and was published in Chemistry Europe. And the title is Synthesis and Characterization of Thiopine-based Donor-Acceptor-Donor Heptameric ligands for spectral assignment of polymorphic amyloid beta deposits. So this study describes the synthesis of, again, thiophene-based donor-acceptor-donor heptameric ligands that can be used for spectral assignment of distinct amyloid beta aggregates. The ability of the ligands to selectively distinguish A-beta deposits was abolished when the chemical composition of the ligands was altered. These findings provide the structural and functional basis for the development of new fluorescent ligands that can distinguish between aggregated proteinaceous species consisting of the same peptide or protein. This next paper is by first author Ding, last author Shi. It was published in an Analyst, and its title is Interface Engineering of Microelectrodes Toward Ultrasensitive Monitoring of Beta Amyloid Peptides in Cerebrospinal Fluid in Alzheimer's Disease. And just so you know, I'll be using beta amyloid and amyloid beta interchangeably, as well as A-beta, so hopefully that's not confusing. So the authors developed a novel electrochemical biosensor with a gold microelectrode interface for monitoring amyloid beta peptide monomers in cerebrospinal fluid. The electrochemical biosensor displayed ultrasensitivity and selectivity for A-beta monomers with the detection limit down to 0.2 picomolar, I guess, picomolar, so PM, making it useful for evaluating the dynamic change of A-beta monomer levels in cerebrospinal fluid of live mice. Okay, the next paper is The Clustering of M-APOE Anti-Amyloidogenic Peptide on Nanoparticle Surface Does Not Alter Its Performance in Controlling Beta-Amyloid Aggregation. In this collaboration between multiple European labs, the authors took advantage of atomic force microscopy imaging and fluorescent techniques in order to investigate whether the clustering of the anti-amyloidogenic molecule MApoE on gold nanoparticle surface affects its performance in controlling amyloid beta aggregation and disaggregation processes. They found that the ability of free MApoE to destroy preformed A-beta fibrils or to hinder the A-beta aggregation process is preserved after its clustering on gold nanoparticles. This allows the possibility to design multifunctional drug delivery systems on any nanoparticle surface without affecting their performance in controlling A-beta aggregation processes. This next paper is on base E detection. It's entitled A Novel Two-Photon Ratiometric Fluorescent Probe for Imaging and Sensing of Base E in Different Regions of AD Mouse Brain. The first author is Ge, that's G-E. The last author is Tian, and this was published in Chemical Science. So this group designed a fluorescent probe that they called, here we go, AF633MCID2, or TO rather, and I'll break this down in a second, to enable higher sensitivity and selectivity in detecting base E in vivo. The probe consists of Alexa Fluor 633 conjugated to a novel photon donor called merocyanine derivative, which is MCID, through a peptide substrate that is specifically cleaved by base 1 to enable high selectivity of the probe. They applied this probe in AD mouse brain tissue and were able to detect region-specific differences in base 1 expression with upregulation observed in the somatosensory barrel cortex and CA1, an association with pathogenesis caused by oxidative stress. Okay, there are a few more papers on microscopy and imaging techniques. So let's start with AstroDot, a new method for studying the spatial distribution of mRNA in astrocytes. And this is by Udar and Cohen-Salmon and was published in the Journal of Cellular Science. So this group developed a method to analyze the spatial distribution of mRNA in astrocytes. They used a combination of in situ hybridization and immunostaining with GFAP to visualize mRNA in astrocytes and analyzed images with AstroDot, which is an ImageJ plugin that can be used with the R package AstroStat. When they applied this method to a mouse model of AD, they found that mRNA density and distribution changed as a function of the region of the hippocampus and the astrocyte's proximity to amyloid plaques. Next, we have live neuron high-content screening reveals synaptotoxic activity in Alzheimer mouse model homogenates. So this is by Jian and Brody is the last author and was published in Scientific Reports. This was a collaboration between labs in the USA and Germany, in which the authors developed a high-content imaging method to assess synaptic changes and applied it to brain homogenates from 3XTG, or transgenic, AD mice. The method itself consists of serial imaging of endogenous, fluorescently labeled presynaptic VAMP2 and postsynaptic PSD95 in live primary neurons in 96 well plates, and makes use of automatic image analysis to quantify the colocalized stain, which indicates a synapse, and to assess synaptic changes. They found that proteins isolated from the AD mouse model brain homogenate were synaptotoxic. This toxicity was only in part eliminated by immunodepletion of amyloid beta. This next paper is titled Revisiting the Radiosynthesis of 18F FPEB and preliminary PET imaging in a mouse model of Alzheimer's disease. And the first author is Varlo, the last author is Stevenson, and again, this was a large international collaboration published in Molecules. So 18F FPEB, I'm just going to refer to this as FPEB, is a positron emission tomography radiopharmaceutical used for imaging the abundance and distribution of mGluR5 in the central nervous system. Efficient radio labeling of the aromatic ring of FPEB has been an ongoing challenge. In this study, 5 metal-free precursors of the radiofluorination of FPEB were compared, namely a chloro nitro sulfonium salt and 2 spirocyclic iodonium iodide, also referred to as SCIDE or SCIDY, precursors. The chloro and nitro precursors resulted in a low radiochemical yield, that is below 10%, whereas both SCIDE precursors and the sulfonium salt precursor produced FPEB in the highest radiochemical yields of 25% and 36% respectively. Preliminary PET and CT imaging studies with FPEB were conducted in the APP and PS1 transgenic mouse model of AD. In APP/PS1 mice, whole brain distribution at 5 minutes post-injection showed a slightly higher uptake than in age-matched wild-type controls. Further studies to explore mGluR5 as an early biomarker for AD are underway. And I'm sorry for the background noise. It just started pouring here in Montreal, and my roommate came home in a frenzy, so you might have heard some background stomping there. Okay, and that's it for our selection of papers that came out in February 2020 covering new lab techniques. Next up, we have a few papers describing new animal models of AD. So starting with some transgenic models, the first is visualization of soluble tau oligomers in tau P31L BIFC transgenic mice demonstrates the progression of tauopathy. This is by Shin and last author Kim. And it's a collaboration between labs in Korea and the US and was published in Progress in Neurobiology. So this group created a transgenic mouse model, which they decided to call tau P31L BIFC, which I feel like could have been a catchier name, as a tool to monitor tau self-assembly in the brain. This model uses biomolecular fluorescence complementation introduced to human tau containing the P31L mutation, allowing for the monitoring and quantification of tau self-assembly. When the group characterized this model, they found that soluble tau oligomerization began at 3 months and massive tau fragmentation occurred at 6 months. These fragmented tau species served as a seed for insoluble tau aggregation, and at 9 months, the BIFC-labeled tau aggregates co-aggregated with endogenous mouse tau to show an increase in the fluorescent signal again. Neuronal degeneration and cognitive deficits were observed from 12 months of age in the model. Okay, next up we have a new mouse line with reduced GluE2QR site RNA editing exhibits loss of dendritic spines, hippocampal CA1 neuronal loss, learning and memory impairments, and NMD receptor independent seizure vulnerability. This is by first author Conan, last author Vissel, and was published in Molecular Brain. So this group generated and characterized a new mouse model with increased calcium-permeable AMPA receptors using a point mutation in the intronic editing complementary sequence of the GluA2 gene, resulting in unedited GluA2. Mice homozygous for this mutation exhibited altered current-voltage relations, confirming calcium-permeable AMPA receptors at the synapse. This led to a loss of hippocampal CA1 neurons, altered dendritic morphology, a reduction in CA1 hippocampal cell spine density, learning and memory deficits, and NMDA receptor-independent long-term potentiation and seizures. This model was suggested to be relevant to AD research due to the potential of unedited GluA2 for driving NMDA receptor-independent processes in brain function and disease. The next two studies explore comorbidities of Alzheimer's disease. The first is entitled A Mouse Model of Chemotherapy-Related Cognitive Impairments Integrating the Risk Factors of Aging and APOE4 Genotype. And this paper is by Demby and last author Rebecca, and it was published in Behavioral Brain Research. This study uses an established model of AD, namely the APOE knock-in mice, to test the relationship between APOE4 and cancer-related cognitive impairment, to identify associations of chemotherapy with behavioral and structural correlates of cognition, and to test whether chemotherapy affects markers of AD. Both APOE3 and APOE4 knock-in mice treated with doxorubicin, which is a chemotherapy drug, showed impairment in spatial memory. Gray matter volume in the frontal cortex decreased in APOE4 mice treated with doxorubicin versus in APOE3 mice. This study demonstrates cognitive impairments in aged APOE4 knock-in mice after doxorubicin treatment and establishes the system as a novel and powerful model of cancer-related cognitive impairment. This next study is looking at comorbidity with strokes. So it's entitled Modeling Mixed Vascular and Alzheimer's Dementia Using Focal Subcortical Ischemic Stroke in Human APOE4-TR5XFAD Transgenic Mice. I'm going to refer to those as AD mice, moving on. So this was published in Translational Stroke Research, and the first author is Hayden, last author is Hinman. These researchers designed a novel mouse model of subcortical white matter ischemic stroke and AD to inform understanding of the cellular and molecular mechanisms of mixed vascular and AD dementia. Subcortical white matter ischemic stroke underlying forelimb motor cortex was induced by local stereotactic injection of an irreversible endothelial nitric oxide synthase inhibitor. Subcortical white matter ischemic stroke, or sham procedures, were performed on 8-week-old human, again, this is the APOE4 targeted replacement 5XFAD or just AD mice. Behavioral tests were done at 7, 10, 15, and 20 weeks, and a subset of animals underwent FDG PET/CT imaging. Compared with sham AD mice, those with an early subcortical ischemic stroke showed a significant reduction in amyloid plaque burden in the region of cortex overlying the subcortical stroke at 20 weeks. Cognitive performance was improved in AD mice with stroke compared with sham AD animals. IBA1 positive microglial cells in the region of cortex overlying the subcortical stroke were increased in number and in morphologic complexity, suggesting that amyloid clearance may be promoted by an interaction between activated microglia and cortical neurons in response to subcortical stroke. This novel approach to modeling mixed vascular and AD dementia provides a valuable tool for dissecting the molecular interactions between these two common pathologies. Okay, we'll move away from mice into a different type of animal model. The next study is entitled Increased Oxidative Stress, Hyperphosphorylation of Tau, and Dystrophic Microglia in the Hippocampus of Aged Tupaia Belengari. And I don't blame you if you don't know what those are. I'll get to it in a second. This paper is by Rodriguez Calejas and Perez Cruz is the last author. It's a collaboration between Mexico and Germany and was published in Glia. So working with an age range of tree shrews, from an average of 3.8 years to 7.5 years, the latter being the aged category, this group characterized several AD-relevant phenotypes in the hippocampus. They found that aged shrews have an increased number of activated microglia containing ferritin and presented more of a dystrophic phenotype. They also found that with aging, oxidative damage to RNA increased in all hippocampal regions and tau hyperphosphorylation was enhanced in the dentate gyrus, CA3, and subcolliculum. Overall, the group proposed that aged tree shrews may be a suitable model for examining changes in microglia during aging and in the context of neurodegenerative diseases. Lastly, there's one animal model study that was improving on a previous animal model. It's called the Behavioral and Neuropathologic Sexual Dimorphism and Absence of MIP3-alpha in Tau P31S mouse model of Alzheimer's disease. And this is by first author Sun, last author Kong, and was published in Journal of Neuroinflammation. So to better characterize the tau P31S transgenic mouse model of AD, this group systematically investigated differences between this model and wild-type littermates with a focus on different sex behavior performance, tau neuropathology, and biomarkers in the plasma and brain. Their findings indicate that there is a sexual dimorphism in the behavior, neuropathology, and plasma proteins in these tau transgenic mice, with the female showing far less of a phenotype. They suggested that males should be used for research, and based on their results, the absence of macrophage inflammatory protein, or MIP3-alpha, could be a new plasma biomarker for AD. Okay, so next up we have a group of papers describing new cellular models, starting with two papers on presenilin. The first is entitled Human-Induced Neurons from Presenilin-1 Mutant Patients Model Aspects of Alzheimer's Disease Pathology. The first author is Schrank, the last author is Stutzmann, and this was an international collaboration published in International Journal of Molecular Sciences. So in this paper, the authors generated human-induced neurons from individuals with or without AD in order to model cell autonomous disease properties. The selected AD patient population expressed mutations in presenilin-1, which I'll refer to as PSEN1. Molecular, immune-based, electrophysiological, and calcium imaging studies were then conducted to establish patterns of cellular pathology in this patient population. The authors found that MPSEN1 human-induced neurons generate increased amyloid beta-42 and hyperphosphorylated tau species and exhibit exaggerated ER calcium responses that are normalized with ryanodine receptor negative allosteric modulators. Interleukin-18 also increased PSEN1 expression. This work highlights the potential for human-induced neurons to model AD pathology and validates their role in defining cellular pathogenesis and their utility for therapeutic screening. The next paper is novel presenilin 1 and 2 double knockout cell line for an in vitro validation of presenilin 1 and 2 mutations. It is by first author Pimenova and last author Goethe, and was published in Neurobiology of Disease. This paper describes the generation and characterization of a novel PSEN1 and 2 double knockout in N2A mouse neuroblastoma cells using CRISPR-Cas9, which results in complete ablation of amyloid beta production, decreased PEN2 expression, and nicastrin glycosylation. The authors examined several PSEN1 and PSEN2 mutations of known and unknown pathogenicity. Known mutants increased the ratio of amyloid beta 42 to 40, with varying effects on A-beta 40, A-beta 42, and total A-beta levels in PEN2 and PEN2 expression. Findings on novel PSEN1 mutations, specifically the V142F and the G26V and G26D, suggest that these underlie the reported clinical observations in autosomal dominant AD patients. All right, next we have a study by Ishikawa and last author Okano. This is again a collaboration between Japan and the US and was published in Cells. And sorry, the title of the paper is MicroRNA-based rapid differentiation of purified neurons from human pluripotent stem cells advances towards quick screening for neuronal disease phenotypes in vitro. So this group developed a novel method for differentiating neurons from human pluripotent stem cells using neuronal microRNAs, microRNA 9-9, and the microRNA 124, and TET-ON-driven expression of neurogenin 2 gene. They found that cells treated with this method maintained high neuronal differentiation rate, expressed neuronal maturation markers, and had high electrical activity with network bursts. They also used this method on cells from AD patients with presenilin 1 or 2 mutations and observed cellular phenotypes in a shorter culture period than those previously reported. Therefore, this new induction method can enable more rapid and simple screening for various types of neuronal disease phenotypes and promote drug discovery. This next section is tissue engineering. There's just one paper in this section for our February selection of papers. It's entitled A Long-Living Bioengineered Neural Tissue Platform to Study Neurodegeneration. It is by first author Rouleau, last author Kaplan, and was published in Macromolecular Bioscience. In this study, the researchers investigated whether a 3D bioengineered neural tissue model derived from human-induced pluripotent stem cells, or iPSCs, can remain stable and functional for over multiple years in culture. Silk-based scaffolds are seeded with neurons and glial cells derived from human iPSCs, supplied by human donors who are either healthy or have been diagnosed with AD. Cell retention and markers of stress remain stable over 2 years. Diseased samples displayed decreased spontaneous electrical activity, and a subset displayed sporadic-like indicators of increased pathological beta amyloid and tau markers characteristic of AD, along with increases in oxidative stress. The authors conclude that the long-term stability of the platform is suited to study chronic brain diseases, including neurodegeneration. And that's it for my section. See you next time.
Hello, Sarah here. And today, under the human methodology section in methods and models, we clustered the papers under three different clusters. So some of them were sorted under neuroimaging, some went under lab techniques, and the last ones were sorted under cognitive testing. So starting with neuroimaging, the first paper was published in Frontiers in Psychiatry by first author Kavizel and last author, Melcher. And the paper is titled, The Neural Mechanisms of Associative Memory Revisited, fMRI Evidence from Implicit Contingency Learning. In the study, the authors used an innovative task paradigm to elucidate neurofunctional relations of encoding and retrieval in associative memory. While the prior literature focused mainly on explicit encoding, here, memory encoding is implemented as an implicit cognitive process or non-deliberate cognitive process. Moreover, instead of defining brain activations related to successful versus unsuccessful memory performance, the task paradigm provides proper no-memory baseline conditions. More specifically, the encoding task includes trials with non-contingent or not learnable stimulus combinations, while the retrieval task uses trials with a simple matching exercise with no mnemonic requirements. This work may be relevant in understanding and further investigating the neurofunctional aberrations occurring during normal and pathological aging. Check the full paper for the results. The next paper is titled Clustering of Brain Functions Network Based on Attribute and Structural Information and Its Application in Brain Diseases. It was published by Cui, first author, then last author is Chen, and you'll find it in Frontiers in Neuroinformatics. This group developed a brain network clustering model to accurately identify brain diseases based on resting state functional magnetic resonance imaging, or fMRI, and this in the absence of clinical information. This method is evaluated on three diseases: Alzheimer's disease, bipolar disorder patients, and schizophrenia. The experimental results show that the proposed method can significantly improve clustering performance, with a consistency of 60.6% for Alzheimer's disease, of 100% for schizophrenia, and 100% for bipolar disorder patients. Third paper in this cluster was published in Computerized Medical Imaging and Graphics, and its title is A Novel CNN-Based Alzheimer's Disease Classification Using Hybrid Enhanced ICA Segmented Gray Matter of MRI. First author is Bashira, and last author is Satya Sairam. This group developed a model to differentiate between MRI images of Alzheimer's disease, mild cognitive impairment, and cognitively normal patients. And from now on, I'll be referring to mild cognitive impairment as MCI. Their model achieved 100% accuracy, sensitivity, and specificity in differentiating between Alzheimer's disease and cognitively normal patients. Comparing AD to MCI patients, they achieved 96.2% accuracy, 93% sensitivity, and 100% specificity. Now, comparing cognitively normal to MCI patients, they found 98% accuracy, 96% sensitivity, and 100% specificity. In multi-class classification, the model achieved 86.7% accuracy, 89.6% sensitivity, and 86.6% specificity in distinguishing between the three classes. Now, fourth paper here was published in Statistics and Medicine, and it's titled Two-Part Hidden Markov Models for Semi-Continuous Longitudinal Data with Non-Ignorable Missing Covariates. Well, I'm actually surprised I could pronounce all of this. The first author is Zhu, and last author is Song. This group proposed a model for the analysis of semi-continuous longitudinal data in the presence of missing covariates. This can be applied to longitudinal studies on Alzheimer's disease, notably the Alzheimer's Disease Neuroimaging Initiative dataset. They applied the model to this data set in the paper and claimed to have provided new insights into the pathology of AD and its risk factors. Next is a paper called Bayesian Modeling of Multiple Structural Connectivity Networks During the Progression of Alzheimer's Disease. It was published in Biometrics by Peterson, the first author, and last author is Vannucci. This group aimed to infer structural changes in brain connectivity resulting from disease progression. They used cortical thickness measurements from healthy control, mild cognitive impairment, or Alzheimer's disease patients. And they developed a novel approach for inference of multiple networks with related edge values across groups. With this, they identified key alterations in structural connectivity that may reflect disruptions to the healthy brain, such as decreased connectivity within the occipital lobe with increasing disease severity. They also illustrated the proposed method through simulations where they demonstrate its performance in structural learning and precision matrix estimation with respect to alternative approaches. Next paper is called an EEG-FNIRS hybridization technique in the four-class classification of Alzheimer's disease. It was published by Sicilisi, this is the first author, and last author is Young. And you'll find it in Neuroscience Methods. In this paper, this group presents a hybrid electroencephalogram functional near-infrared spectroscopy model, which are referred to as EEG for electroencephalogram -FNIRS. This model is used for classifying four classes of subjects, including one healthy control group, one mild cognitive impairment group, and two Alzheimer's disease patient groups. This feature set was able to achieve a higher accuracy by integrating the complementary properties compared to using EEG alone or FNIRS alone. This provides enhanced classification performance and multi-class classification of Alzheimer's disease population. Now, next cluster, now we're moving to lab techniques under which there are two papers. First one, titled Diagnosis of Mild Cognitive Impairment and Alzheimer's Disease by the Plasma and Serum Amyloid Beta 42 Assay through Highly Sensitive Piptoid Nanosheet Sensor. It was published in ACS Applied Materials and Interfaces by Gao, first author, and the last author is Hu Zed. This group developed a label-free assay for the quantification of blood amyloid beta 42. For this, they used, wait for it, high-throughput surface plasmon resonance imaging, and they paired it with an antibody mimetic piptoid nanosheet. So they combined two techniques, these high-throughput SPR imaging with antibody mimetic piptoid nanosheet, to detect the amyloid peptide. They demonstrated that their novel system was able to distinguish between the serum of cognitively normal, or MCI for mild cognitive impairment, or Alzheimer's disease patients with high sensitivity and specificity. They claim this precedes the diagnostic performance of an amyloid beta 42 specific antibody. Given that this assay is cost effective and relatively non-invasive, it could be an important advancement in the early diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. The next paper was published in Scientific Reports and is titled Validation of a Novel and Accurate APOE4 Assay for Automated Chemistry Analyzers. First author is Vega and last author is Calero. This group sought to validate the E4 risk test, a new latex-enhanced immunoturbidimetric blood assay for apolipoprotein E4, and I'll refer to this as APOE4 from now on. So they developed or validated an assay for APOE4 determination in human plasma samples. The test showed high performance in terms of lot-to-lot variability, precision, interferences, reagent stability, prozone, and detectability. Furthermore, diagnostic accuracy is almost equal to the gold standard APOE E4 genotyping by PCR. It can be adapted to any clinical chemistry analyzer, including the high-throughput analyzers present in most hospitals and clinical laboratories. Now, last cluster under this section is called cognitive testing, and it's not really a cluster. It only has a paper sorted under it. This paper is called Using Practice Effects for Targeted Trials or Subgroup Analysis in Alzheimer's Disease, How Practice Effects Predict Change Over Time. It was published in PLOS ONE, and first author is Wang, last author is Schneider. Okay, wait for it. This is a long one. But first, we need to define practice effect. It refers to where results of tests improve when taken more than once. All right, so in this study, the researchers wanted to evaluate how practice effect impacts cognitive progression and the outcome of clinical trials. They looked at Alzheimer's disease and mild cognitive impairment, or MCI. Using data from a meta database consisting of 18 studies, including participants from the Alzheimer's Disease Cooperative Studies, or ADCS, and the Alzheimer's Disease Neuroimaging Initiative, with ADAS-COG11 as the primary outcome. They defined practice effects based on the improvement in the first two ADAS-COG11, or ADAS-COG11 scores, and then estimated the presence of practice effects and compared the cognitive progression between participants with and without practice effects. The overall percent of practice effects for AD participants was 39%, and it was 53.3% for MCI participants. Now, for AD studies, the mean change from baseline to 2 years was 12.8 points for the non-practice effects group versus 7.4 for the practice effects group. Whereas for MCI studies, it was 4.1 for non-practice effects group versus 0.2 for the practice effects group. AD participants without practice effects progressed 0.9 points faster than those with practice effects over a period of 2 years in CDR-SB. Whereas for MCI participants, the difference is 0.7 points. The sample sizes can be different by over 35% when estimated based on participants with or without practice effects. Thus, the authors concluded that the planning of future AD or MCI clinical trials should account for practice effects to avoid underpower or consider target trials or stratification analysis based on practice effects. With this, we are done with this section of the episode methods and models, and we will be moving to the next section, which I'll be presented myself. Our next section is computational models, and for this one, we identified three clusters again. First one being molecular and structural modeling, then I'll be moving to neuroimaging, and last, I'll be summarizing the papers under genetics and bioinformatics. So first, under molecular and structural modeling, this paper is titled FIXR, or F-I-X-R, a framework to reconstruct fiber cross-sections from X-ray fiber diffraction experiments. It was published in Acta Crystallographica, Section D, Structural Biology, the first author being Roig Solvas, and last author is Makovsky. This group proposed to use small-angle X-ray scattering measurements together with diffraction theory. They aim to infer the electron distribution of the average cross-section of a fiber. This approach is tested using simulated small-angle X-ray scattering data from amyloid beta fibril models and different fibrillar assemblies, and using measured data of tobacco mosaic fibers from small-angle X-ray scattering experiments, recovering the geometry and density of the cross-sections in all cases. Results are in agreement with previously proposed models from cryo-EM measurements. Next paper was published in Acta Crystallographica, Section D, Biological Crystallography. It is called Amyloid Structure Determination in Relion-3.1. Or perhaps it's supposed to be pronounced Relion-3.1. 3.1. It was published by Shears. It's a one-author paper where they discuss aspects of helical reconstruction and reliant Borrelian that are particularly relevant to amyloids. They illustrate the problem of local optima in refinement and how to detect them. They introduce a new method to calculate 3D initial models from reference-free 2D class averages. All methods described are open source and distributed within Reliant-3.1. Their use is illustrated using a publicly available dataset on tau filaments from the brain of an individual with Alzheimer's disease. The second paper in this cluster is titled Exploring the Interplay Between Fibrillization and Amorphous Aggregation Channels on the Energy Landscapes of Tau Repeat Isoforms. It was published in PNAS, first author being Chen, last author Wolinus. This group used a predictive computational strategy called the Associative Memory Water-Mediated Structure and Energy Model to study how tau filaments differ between Alzheimer's disease and Pick's disease. They found that amorphous oligomers leading to branched structures and prefibrillar oligomers were present in both disease landscapes, and they proposed that there must be significant structural reordering to switch from amorphous aggregation to fibrillization. The model also allowed them to predict the effects of tau phosphorylation. Next paper was published in Molecules, and its title is GPR6 Structural Insights, Homology Model Construction and Docking Studies. First author is Isawi, last author is Reggio. GPR6 is an orphan G protein coupled receptor that has been associated with the cannabinoid family because of its recognition of a subset of cannabinoid ligands. It represents a possible target for the treatment of Alzheimer's disease. In this paper, a human GPR6 homology model was constructed using a suite of computational techniques which permitted the identification of unique GPR6 structural features. This model was validated using a subset of patented pyrazine analogs and identified the key residues in the binding crevice for ligand recognition. They will take the structural knowledge into the next phase of GPR6 project, in which scaffold hopping will be used to design new GPR6 ligands. Next section has quite a few papers under it, and it's the neuroimaging section. First paper is titled Group-Guided Fused Laplacian Sparse Group Lasso for Modeling Alzheimer's Disease Progression. It was published in Computational Math Methods Medicine, first author being Liu, last author is Kong. In the study, the authors developed a tool to infer the trajectories of patients' cognitive performance over time. They want to identify biomarkers that connect the patterns of brain atrophy and AD progression. They propose a structured regularized regression approach termed group-guided fused Laplacian sparse group lasso. From now on, we'll be referring to it as GFL-SGL. This approach helps to infer disease progression by considering multiple predictions of the same cognitive scores at different time points, allowing for longitudinal analysis. The proposed GFL-SGL simultaneously exploits the interrelated structures within the MRI features and among the tasks with sparse group lasso, SGL norm, and presents a novel group-guided fused Laplacian regularization. This combination effectively incorporates the relatedness among multiple longitudinal time points with a general weighted, undirected dependency graph, and useful inherent group structure and features. Furthermore, an alternating direction method of multipliers, or ADMM-based algorithm, is also derived to optimize the non-smooth objective function of the proposed approach. Experiments on the dataset from Alzheimer's Disease Neuroimaging Initiative, or ADNI, show that the proposed GFL-SGL outperformed some other state-of-the-art algorithm and effectively fused the multimodality data. The compact sets of cognition-relevant imaging biomarkers identified by this approach are consistent with the results of clinical studies. Whew, that's a long one. Next paper is called A Deep Siamese Convolution Neural Network for Multi-Class Classification of Alzheimer's Disease. It was published in Brain Sciences by Mahmoud, first author, and the last author is Shu Yan. This group aimed at classifying dementia stages. They developed a Siamese convolutional neural network model inspired by VGG-16, also called OxfordNet. They extend the insufficient and imbalanced data by using augmentation approaches. Experiments are performed on a publicly available dataset, open access series of imaging studies, also called OASIS. By using the proposed approach, a test accuracy of 99.05% is achieved for the classification of dementia stages. In comparison with the state-of-the-art models, the proposed model was better in performance, efficiency, and accuracy. Next paper was published in Neuroimage Clinical, and its title is Systems Modeling of White Matter Microstructural Abnormalities in Alzheimer's Disease. The first author is Hargus Luoglu Molak, and the last author is Zhang. The aim of the study is to investigate regional vulnerability to AD and identify genetic risk factors and gene subnetworks underlying white matter abnormality in AD. The authors developed a systems biology framework to integrate matched diffusion tensor imaging, genetic, and transcriptomic data. A single nucleotide polymorphism, or SNP, RS2203712 in SELF1, or CELF1, was most significantly associated with several diffusion tensor imaging-derived features in the hippocampus, which is a top-ranked brain region. An immune response gene subnetwork in the blood was most correlated with diffusion tensor imaging features across all the brain regions. Next paper is called Computational Insight into the Binding Profile of the Second Generation PET Tracer PI2620 with Tau Fibrils. It was published in ACS Chemical Neuroscience. First author is Kwong, last author is Akrin. This group sought to further elucidate the binding sites of the PET tracer PI2620, which is capable of quantifying neurofibrillary tangles in vivo. They used the cryogenic electron microscopy, or cryo-EM-derived structure of the tau fibril, and they implemented a multi-scale simulation workflow. This allowed them to identify 8 surface binding sites, 3 core binding sites, and 1 entry site, many more than the 4 that had been previously reported. The entry site was found to have the highest binding affinity and capacity due to the hydrophobic interactions and its easy accessibility. Next paper is titled A Combination of 3D Discrete Wavelet Transform and 3D Local Binary Pattern for Classification of Mild Cognitive Impairment. It was published in BMC Medical Informatics and Decision Making. First author is Basin, last author is Agrawal. The authors propose a machine learning approach for classifying patients of MCI into 2 groups, one group with AD and the other who are not diagnosed with any sign of AD. The proposed algorithm is also used to distinguish MCI patients from controls based on the structural magnetic resonance imaging data. This work proposes a 3D variant of local binary pattern, or LBP, called LBP20 for extracting features. Subsequently, a combination of 3D discrete wavelet transform, or 3D DWT, and the proposed LBP20 has been used for extracting features. The relevant features are selected using the Fisher discriminant ratio and the classification has been carried out using the support vectra machine. The combination of 3D DWT with LBP-20 results in a maximum accuracy of 88.77. Similarly, the proposed combination of methods is also applied to distinguish MCI from cognitively normal subjects. The proposed method results in the classification accuracy of 90.31 in this data. They assess it for accuracy, specificity, and sensitivity, and find it to be superior in comparison to the existing methods. This may contribute to the effective diagnosis of MCI and may prove advantageous in clinical settings. Next cluster of papers is genetics and bioinformatics. First paper is titled High Throughput and Efficient Multi-Locus Genome-Wide Association Study on Longitudinal Outcomes. It was published in Bioinformatics. First author is Xu. Last author is Yuan. This group sought to improve analytical approaches for longitudinal data. They developed a high-throughput machine learning approach for multi-locus genome-wide association studies. To do this, they used longitudinal traits by coupling empirical Bayesian estimates from mixed effects modeling with a novel 10-norm algorithm. They report that their model has a robust control of false positives and can simultaneously analyze millions of single nucleotide polymorphisms. They applied their model of the Alzheimer's Disease Neuroimaging Initiative dataset and found that it identified well-known Alzheimer's disease SNPs over 6,000 times faster than other approaches. The source code is publicly available. The next paper was published in BMC Bioinformatics and is called GenEPI, Gene-Based Epistasis Discovery Using Machine Learning. First author is Chong. Last author is Chen. This collaborative effort resulted in a novel computational package that can be used with genome-wide association studies data to detect epistasis. Epistasis being the interaction between genetic variants associated with phenotypes. This machine learning approach, called GenEPI, is capable of identifying both within gene and cross-gene epistasis, and constructs prediction models by L1 regularized regression with stability selection. It was shown to outperform other widely used methods and was applied to the Alzheimer's disease neuroimaging dataset, for which results can be found in the paper. Next paper is called Discovering Weaker Genetic Associations Guided by Known Associations. It was published in BMC Medical Genomics. First author is Wang, last author is Wu. In this paper, this group attempted to reveal weaker genetic variants associated with disease. They proposed a novel statistical method called Constrained Sparse Multi-Locus Linear Mixed Model, or CS-LMM, which incorporates known associations as prior knowledge in the model. The model also accounts for polygenic effects and corrects for complex relatedness. They applied this method to the genome-wide association studies data set of both Alzheimer's disease and alcoholism and discovered several novel SNPs. Our next and last paper in this section was published in Nature Neuroscience. The first author is Sim, last author is Williams, and its title is The Multiplex Model of the Genetics of Alzheimer's Disease. Now, based on the fact that over 50 loci spanning various pathways are implicated in the risk of AD, this group proposed a multiplex model as a new way to understand AD. The model builds off of the 50% of late onset AD heritability that has already been captured. It reflects the combination of genetic and environmental components of the disease in a tissue-specific manner to trigger or sustain a disease cascade resulting in cell and synaptic loss. So that's it for the section on computational methods. Thank you for following.
You are listening to our Methods and Models episode on Alzheimer's disease from February 2020. We only covered a portion of the published papers that fit into this theme, and we're looking for feedback so we can do better. If you have ideas or suggestions, or if you notice something that can be improved, or even if there's something you really liked and want us to keep doing, please let us know by email or by filling our feedback survey. You will find the instructions in the episode description. And don't forget to hit subscribe. You can also follow us on Twitter at aminder_podcast. If you're interested in joining the team, just reach out to us. Our email address is aminderpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our podcast useful and accessible. Until next time.